You're listening to Talking Hoosier Baseball,
a podcast by fans
from the IUBase.com website.
For anyone wanting more information on the Indiana University baseball program.
We're recording this on Wednesday, April 21st, 2021. I'm Casty Palmer, joined by the master of the RPI, Carl James, and the man who still talks about the Lazy Mary game 3 years later, Chris Feeney. Josh Bennett has the night off. Well, it was a bit of an up and down weekend for IU. The Hoosiers seemed to be on cruise control to start the weekend as they jumped out to a 5-0 lead at the stretch of game one, with 2 runs in the third and 3 runs in the seventh. Northwestern, however, had other things in mind, scoring 4 runs in the bottom of the seventh. The pitching staffs were on point through the remainder of the game, with neither offense getting a runner further than first base. The Indiana scoring got their offense moving in the third inning. Drew Ashley was plunked with one out and was moved to second on a Grant Richardson single up the middle. Cole Barr drew the second of what would be 3 walks on the game to load the bases with just one out. After a strikeout by Paul Tates, Kip Fugers drove in both Ashley and Richardson with a 2-out, 2-strike single to right. Indiana scattered a few more runners over the middle innings, but couldn't bring them home. The Hoosiers then apparently broke the game open in the seventh inning, scoring 3. Richardson had his second hit of the game, followed by Barr's 3rd walk of the game, which chased the Wildcat starter. Tates welcomed the new Northwestern pitcher with an RBI double down the right field line, driving in Richardson and moving Barr to third. A sack fly by Morgan Colopy scored Barr, and Tyler Van Pelt followed that up with a 2-out, 2-strike RBI single of his own. Every Hoosier batter reached base during game one. 6 batters had at least 1 hit, and 3 Hoosiers had a multi-hit game. On the mound, Tommy Summer was dominant through the first 6 innings, giving up just 1 hit and having just 2 runners reach as far as second base. That 1 hit came during the 4th inning, which was the only real time Summer faced trouble before the 7th inning. A leadoff double, walk, and wild pitch went for nothing as Summer recorded a pair of 3-pitch strikeouts. The 7th inning was a struggle for Summer. He issued a leadoff 9-pitch walk before allowing 4 consecutive 1-out singles, most of which were to the bottom of the Northwestern order. That was the end of the line for Tommy, who was relieved by Nathan Stahl. Stahl struck out the 1st batter he faced for the 2nd out of the inning, but then gave up a bases-loaded ground rule double. The 9th batter of the inning hit a fly ball to Richardson in center to end the inning, stranding 2 runners in scoring position. Closer Matt Litwicki made his first appearance in almost a month, picking up the save with a scoreless 9th inning. Saturday was a bit of a reverse from Friday, with Northwestern jumping out to an early lead and Indiana clawing their way back into a game, which would eventually be an 8-5 loss. Hoosier starter McCade Brown again had some struggles with control in the 1st inning, hitting the 1st batter on a 1-2 pitch and walking another batter to move a runner into scoring position with just 1 out. A strikeout and phenomenal barehand play by Barr left them there. The 2nd inning didn't go quite so well. Brown gave up a leadoff home run to Bianchina before fielding a bunt and striking out the 3rd batter of the inning. A 2-out error proved costly as the next 2 batters smacked doubles into right center field to push the score to 3-0. Brown faced Bianchina again in the 3rd inning with the same result. This time a 2-out homer to nearly the same spot as the 2nd inning. After a smooth 4th inning, Brown's control issues reemerged as he hit and walked consecutive batters with 1 out. Braden Tucker came in and induced the 4-6-3 double play to end the inning. After a pair of uneventful innings, Tucker ran into trouble of his own just after the Hoosiers had taken the lead in the eighth. Tucker allowed four singles and two runs in five batters, with a sack bunt sandwiched in the middle. John Madunio allowed one more hit and run before striking out the final two batters he faced. After trailing 4-0 through three innings, the Hoosier bats clawed their way back with a pair of runs in each of the fourth and fifth innings. Van Pelt got the scoring started with a first pitch two-run home run.
We had gone into the weekend with Van Pelt. I thought he had a good couple weeks, and we had kind of gone through the guys, and you circle back around, and we liked Tyler in the matchup. And we had thought about doing some different things against the lefty going into the weekend, but Tyler had played so well, especially on Saturday. He had just played so well that it's hard to take a guy out of the lineup that had been so productive.
Barr matched him the next inning with a two-run bomb of his own. Indiana took the lead in the eighth when Van Pelt hit a leadoff double. Colin Hopkins moved him to third with a sack bunt, and Ashley brought him home with a single. Five Hoosiers recorded at least one hit, and Ashley and Van Pelt had multi-hit games. And after a pair of tense games, Indiana avoided all drama in Sunday's rubber match, beating the Wildcats 4-0 in Northwestern's first shutout of the season. Gabe Bierman was phenomenal on the mound, working 7 2/3 innings of two-hit baseball. He didn't even face a runner in scoring position until the sixth inning after a leadoff single followed by a pair of groundouts. Bierman went 3 up, 3 down in 5 different innings and averaged just 11 pitches per inning through the seventh. The eighth inning was the first time he allowed more than one runner on the base paths at a time, walking the leadoff batter and giving up a 2-out single to move the runner to third. Ty Bothwell came in and struck out the only batter he faced, stranding the two runners. Litwicky closed out this one as well, going 1-2-3 with a pair of strikeouts. Throughout the game, the IU pitching staff kept the most home run happy Big Ten team to the infield, allowing just 2 infield singles on the day. The Hoosier offense spread its scoring throughout the game, scoring 1 run in the second, 2 runs in the fourth, and 1 run in the eighth. Van Pelt again got the scoring started with an RBI fielder's choice after a pair of singles from Barr and Fugers. The fourth inning featured some power as Richardson hit a leadoff double down the right field line, and Colopy smashed a 2-out, 2-strike, 2-run home run. That's sounding a little familiar there. After a trio of quiet innings featuring just an infield single from Richardson, the Hoosiers had some small ball fun in the eighth, scoring their final run of the game without a hit in the inning. Tanka Spalen drew a leadoff walk, and Ashley bunted him into scoring position. Tates was plunked a few pitches later, and an error by the Wildcat first baseman loaded the bases with just one out. A sack fly by Barr scored the last run of the game. The Hoosiers made the most of their hits in this one, scoring 4 runs on 5 hits and stranding just 4 runners, 2 of them in that eighth inning. Well, there was quite a bit of good over the weekend, and so Hoosier highlight there were a lot of Hoosier highlights to choose from, but I'm going to take advantage of naming my Hoosier highlight first, and I'm going with Gabe Bierman's pitching in game 3, because that was absolutely phenomenal, and it was absolutely what Indiana needed. After having some reliable guys who looked great at times and then looked not so great in others, it was very, very helpful to have a guy just keep cruising. He never even really faced trouble until that eighth inning. So I'm going to go with Gabe on this one. Carl, how about you? What's your Hoosier highlight?
Well, Cass, you went with outs 1 through 23. I'm going to choose out 24. Ty Bothwell comes in to pitch to one batter, Calarco at the top of the order, the only real threat, runners on first and third. It's just one of those things. It's a two-out situation. Two-out hitting was the critical thing to the whole weekend. And Ty Bothwell, he got behind. It was a 3-1 count. He got behind. But you know what? He trusted his stuff. And not only did you strike him out, he froze him up and struck him out looking. It was the only appearance Ty had was that one at bat, but it was critical. Chris, how about you?
Thanks, Carl. Like we usually do, I'm going to have some stuff from the pros into the high school ranks. But without Josh here this week, I really might as well throw him a 2 cents for some Hoosier highlights that went on through the series. Ty was a huge one. I really like how you pointed that one out. To think he only faced the one batter, but it was such a big moment. It was definitely key for me. I thought another big Hoosier highlight was the bounce back, right? The end of that game Saturday, you know, left a real sour taste in their mouth. And for the guys to come out Sunday, and really, it wasn't much of a game at all. And I got to say, when it started, I was a little worried because this is not a series we could have lost, okay? They were calling it a business trip on Twitter. They all knew they had to take care of the business on this one. And was it going to be easy? No, we didn't think so. With a lot of big bats in the lineup and all that. But really, the Sunday attitude, the way it was a big highlight for me. I really liked how there was no doubt, right? We got up, we kept going. We got up, stepped on it, done, over, next. So for me, that's another big highlight, you know, for the Hoosier ranks on the field. As far as the pros, unfortunately, I had to do some editing today. Caleb Barriger's streak of no runs allowed did stop today at 18 innings straight. All right, so it was 22 straight appearances. And he does get a lot of one-out appearances where he vultures those wins. But for 22 straight appearances, he had not given up a run. Ironically, it was a misplay by Dickerson that kind of cost it. It was an unearned run. But Barriger did stop the streak. But for those who didn't know about it, I mean, this was going back 17.2 innings, going back to August of last year. And it was real impressive because he comes in like Ty. Boom, you're going to get one batter. That's all you're going to get. You got to get it done. And we'll probably score 2 runs after you leave and get another win for you. But Caleb was real impressive. It did stop today, though, during today's game. Another Hoosier highlight, Kyle Hart. He got 10 strikeouts in 4 innings in his the alternate site league team. He was actually playing the Mets. Yes, he was, unfortunately. The Met bats didn't stack up too good against Kyle Hart's team. But, you know, Kyle's showing it again. I really hope he doesn't get stuck in that 4A role that some players do where they dominate the minors and then the majors just isn't there for him. I'm going to chalk it up that last year was a funky season. There were no fans. Everything was weird. And I think he's going to get another shot this year where it being more normal. I look forward to seeing Kyle getting on the mound for the Red Sox again. I feel like 2 weeks ago, but this was since the last episode, that Kyle Schwarber hit that walk-off home run, his first home run as a National. So I definitely want to get that one in there. And as we're talking about big bats, there is a high school bat right now that we have recruited, and he's part of the 2021 class, the vaunted class, the one that's coming. And I want to get the stats exactly right here, so I'm going to pull him up. He is wowing the Indiana high school circuit right now. And I know he was a big recruit, and we were looking forward to having him. I don't think we thought he was going to be doing what he's doing. Let me just pull it up. You can't short somebody a stat, especially in high school. They don't get that many at-bats, right? All right, where is he? Carter Matheson, currently, all right, in the Indiana high school ranks. He leads the state with 9 bombs. He's 3rd in RBIs with 23, and he's 4th in slugging, and he's slugging 1.328. So Carter Matheson is the future Hoosier that I think, again, he wasn't even like the star of this 2021 class. He wasn't. But what he's doing right now is real special, and I think that's something to keep an eye on as the high school games move on. They've only been playing a couple of weeks, but then to lead the whole state in homers, he's only played 12 games. He's got 9 bombs. I'll take it. As many home runs as we can get to the Bart, I'll take. Speaking of stats and homers and numbers, we're going to kick it over to Cass now for a stats update.
Thank you, Chris. For this week, I took a deeper dive on some of the offensive stats, really focusing on the differences between wins and losses. And the first thing that stands out real quickly in losses, this offense is batting 190. In wins, they're batting 279. that answers a lot of questions right there on its own. That 190 average as a team in losses, that is really not good. Compounding that is a high strikeout rate. In losses, the team is averaging, they're striking out about 35% of their at-bats. So more than one in three at-bats, they are striking out. In wins, that's 27%, which is still a touch high, but it's under 30, which is my big goal there. And something that I've mentioned before, and we've talked about a bit, this team thrives in two out situations. That is kind of the make or break for this team this year. In losses, the Hoosiers are batting 152 with two outs. In wins, they're batting 311 with two outs. That, I knew it was going to be different before I ran the numbers. I did not know it was going to be that different. And that, for this season at least, that seems to be a big part of the difference maker. Those two out hits, especially some of the, I said it several times in the recap, two out, two strike hit to bring in a runner. Like that's what this team thrives on. Following up with that, the two out RBI. In losses, the team gets about one RBI every 16 two out at bats. In wins, that's one RBI in every four two out at bats. That's just such a huge difference that it's just batting on a completely different level in these wins. And looking at more two out numbers in losses, the team striking out in 50% of at bats with a runner on third and fewer than two outs. That's not great. Put it pretty much anywhere in the outfield, and that's a run. We saw it a few times over the weekend. Put it into the outfield, it's a run. Sometimes even a ground ball can score. We've had some fielder's choice RBIs. We've had some of that. In wins, that strikeout rate with a runner at third and fewer than two outs is 21. It's less than half of the rate in the losses. And so some of those situational numbers really do make a big difference in these wins versus losses. But that, to me, the thing that stands out the most is that two out batting average between the two. That is a huge difference. And again, really what seems to be driving this team. So that's what I've got for stats this week. Now Carl has some predictions to make that we hope he is completely wrong about.
Thank you, Cass. Yeah. I've been running these power ranks for a few weeks now. And when I, as far as power ranking the Big Ten, I'm trying to come up with a way to do it that in my opinion, takes multiple factors into account, is numerical, but still has a little bit of some sort of judgment quality to it that isn't my judgment. I'm trying to combine a lot of other different folks' ideas to come up with a result. And really, I felt that in the end, for that eye test piece, I had been relying on D1 Baseball's preseason rankings because they're talent analyses. But really, in the Big Ten, you got Nebraska at 8 when they're leading the Big Ten, and you've got Minnesota being considered a regularly decent team, you know, when they have now managed to crack some really bad rankings. So with that, I had to chuck that. So I had to chuck that, and I wanted to replace it with something. I chose Warren Nolan's ELO. despite the fact that I really have no clue how he calculates it. It's just that you look at the rankings and they tend to make sense from a national perspective. And I know they've got a numerical factor to them. I think they deal a lot with scoring margin, that kind of thing. So I included those and I made it an even split between ELO, the actual Big Ten standing rankings, and RPI. And I will say again that, yes, I like RPI within the conference. The national numbers mean nothing. But as far as the teams rank within the conference, I think it still has some weight to it. Now, those three metrics have a different number one team, all of them. Michigan's top in ELO, Nebraska's top in the standards, Iowa is on top in the RPI. Now, RPI and Big Ten standings should be nearly identical once we get to the end of May, because the schedule will be balanced enough that while there might be some slight numerical differences, it's going to be really surprising if even one order is different between those two once we get to the end of May. It's just that you know, most of the top teams are all going to play each other in May. Same thing with all the bottom teams are going to play each other in May. So that's going to take care of all of that eventually. So I did that ranking, and my thought was that I want to know, you know, who are the best teams. And that comes out in order: Nebraska, Michigan, Iowa, Indiana, Ohio State, Maryland, Rutgers, Illinois, Northwestern, Purdue, Michigan State, Penn State, and Minnesota. And, you know, the only thing across the board that's really definitive here is that Minnesota is at the bottom. And I would say that. I would say overall there are 12 competitive teams in the league plus Minnesota. Yeah, this is a theme you're going to hear from me a couple times throughout this thing. So what I wanted to do there is I kind of wanted to get an idea, what does this, if this is a pattern, if I'm trying to match a pattern, how is this going to appear at the end of the season? So I did that, and I tried to figure out, based on the way series tend to go and how different they are in their comparative scores, according to my thing, and I basically found patterns that, hey, when a team that is this far apart on the rankings, when they play each other, they tend to get sweeps. This team tends to get splits. This team tends to get 2-1 series wins. So as it came out, I have the final standings being Nebraska at number one at 33-11, followed by Michigan at 30-14, Iowa at 28-16, Ohio State 27-17, Indiana in fifth, and this is where you guys aren't going to like what I have to say, at 26-17, and followed closely by Maryland at 25-19. Again, I'm just kind of trying to make up a model to try to make this work based on patterns. And really, there isn't a lot of data to generate those patterns. So even I'm not horribly convinced of this. The other thing to look at is, if what we've heard is true, if four Big Ten teams are getting in, I have Indiana going 11-9 down the stretch. All Indiana has to do is improve that to 13-7 down the stretch. And Indiana is easily in the top four, if not the top three. So that much is doable. As far as winning the league, you know what? I think there's going to be a team that goes on a tear. Who is that team going to be? Can it be Indiana? Absolutely. It could be Indiana. The thing is, there's three other teams there. And if one of those three other teams are the one that go on the tear, they're the one that's going to win the league. That to me makes the odds less. The fact that we're dealing with a lot of teams with a possibility and a chance means that any one team doing it, their odds are going to be less. So I really hope that a lot of the national pundits that are convinced of the four team scenario are correct. We won't know that until Selection Monday on Memorial Day in May. My hope is that Indiana becomes that team that gets on a tear. And like Coach Mercer said, he feels the team hasn't played their best ball yet. And if they get it together, maybe everything I wrote here is just a bunch of garbage. And I hope that it all is. All right. So now it's time to hand out the hardware. Chris, what do you got for the red belts?
Thanks, Carl. We have a bit of a change from last week where we had that trifecta horse race where you couldn't have picked one, two, or three of those winners. We do have a bit of an upset winner, I have to say, for this week. We'll save that one for third. For the defensive red belt for the Tony Butler Award, several good plays in the field. One outstanding play in the field, and this is Cole Barr. On that play down at third baseline, when he had to do or die, I'm going to barehand this thing and throw it, or it just ain't going to happen. You know, he really went all out for that ball. And I was honestly not that surprised he made the play. I don't, it's just we've seen his defense improve so much since when, like, regular ground balls, we didn't know what was going to happen, to where I was like, he's got a shot at this thing. And you know, he made it happen. So I got to give it to Cole for this week. Sounds like he made a real nice play in foul territory also to save an out on a pop-up. But Cole's defense has really improved. I feel like we spoke on that last year, and now he's taking it to another level. And I think that's a big part of his leadership. I know Coach Mercer talked about it when we had him on the preseason. You know, I was off the cuff, I think. I wasn't even in the script for him or anything. I was just like, who's the best defensive IQ guys we got? And Cole Barr was right up there that he picked out. And that's part of his leadership. I really think it is. And it can show some of these young kids, like, yo, I didn't come here this big-time defensive third baseman. No, I didn't, you know. And he improved and he worked hard and whatever he had to do. Who knows how much further he would have improved his defense. He didn't miss barely the whole freshman year, right? You know, he missed a lot of time that first season. He could have been even further along with his defense. But Colbar definitely earns it for the defensive red belt. For the pitching red belt, Cass pretty much said it all. I think it pretty much is an obvious one with Gabe Bierman. He was the most dominant pitcher. He also went back to what I said with the Hoosier highlights. He didn't give them an inch. You know, they say, oh, give him an inch, it'll take him. I didn't give him anything. You know, Gabe decided that this was my show. You know what I mean? Just like he did when we were losing, what was it, 4 in a row at that point on that Sunday against Ohio State. Now, I know it didn't work out that day, but it wasn't because of what Gabe did. I really like the Sunday roll for Bierman. I think it puts him up in certain spots, or, you know, he can go for the sweep. He can stop the trouble, or in this one, it's the rubber game. I took a look at, I feel like Cass, I took a look at some of his past statistics because I was like, you know, the last game he didn't give up any runs, and obviously this one he hadn't, and I wanted to look back into that last start that he had. But it turns out it's 16 innings, just 6 hits, 12 Ks, no earned runs. There was one on run somewhere in there, but Gabe's really locked in. I was listening to some of what Mercer said today on the Zoom, and, you know, he mentioned that Gabe had some injuries in the fall. I think it was tendonitis, or, you know, coach spoke about it. And he was saying how most people use the fall to work the kinks out, but Gabe didn't get to do that. Gabe was, like, coaching those teams when they're having the Hoosier versus Hoosier stuff. He just wasn't pitching. So, I mean, look out if Gabe could fire it up even more as we go through this part of the season that Carl's talking about where it's going to get much harder. I think we're going to need a Bierman that we know and that we expected. I don't care what day of the week he's pitching, we know who he is. You know what I mean? For the offensive, he was my upset. I definitely wouldn't have seen this one coming if you had asked me before the series. And I like it, man. I like that Mercer gave him a shot. He's been on his team for several years. Tyler Van Pelt gets the offensive red belt, the Alex Dickerson Award. All right. We've seen Tyler, you know, be a big hustle guy on the team. Word is always that he's this huge weight room guy, that he's a leader in the clubhouse, that he's effort, that he's hustle. And you know what? Now he was results too. And it was great. The home run, forget. Like, I root for these guys. You know, it's Chris Lowe years ago, or, you know, whoever it is. The team loves these guys. They're the glue. They're the leadership of this team. And when they can actually produce on the field, it really is impressive. He had, you know, 3 hits in one game. He had the bomb. I believe he scored a run in each game. The Tyler Van Pelt, we didn't get to hear the Metallica. I really do like when he uses that as his walk-up at the BART. I hope. I mean, I don't know, you know, what his plans are, Coach. It sounded like he might be running it back from, you know, what he was talking about. We might be seeing him right back there to the same 9 with the same DH and everybody the same. I would like that. but we'll get to hear Metallica three times a night. It's great. You know, I don't know. 1 year Red Hot Chili Peppers somebody had, and I would get a kick out of that every time. It's just something different. You know, you're used to certain type of songs and then the same ones even from everybody. And then Tyler Van Pre breaking out the Metallica. So Tyler, I didn't see it coming, but I'm real happy for you. And he works hard. He deserves it. So for the Red Belts this week, we have Cole Barr defensively, Gabe Bierman offensively, Tyler Van Pelt to wrap it up for the three. And we're going to kick it over to Carl for the series preview for the Gophers.
Yes, Chris. Minnesota debuted this week at number six in 11.7's bottom 10 rankings. I don't know for sure, but I think that this is the only time a Power 5 team has been on that ranking so far this year.
They usually have some cool mascots, Carl. I've always looked at those lists. I like looking at that bottom 10 because these teams that make it are like these little small schools, and they have these, like, the mascots are really cool. But now that you're right, it's a – I didn't even realize that part. There's never any real teams when I'm looking at it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
And it's just yeah, we're looking at this, and it's just surprising. I picked this team to win the Big Ten last season in 2020. And if you think about it, they lost their one stud pitcher, but that shouldn't be enough to make them this. All right. Well, the third-place Hoosiers are going to be hosting the last-place Minnesota squad, which is sitting at 4-20. It's a three-game set starting on Friday. IU did win the previous two times these two teams have met, which was the opening week pod in Minneapolis. These were scores of 5-2 and 8-1. And I know it's one of the things, hey, isn't it bad luck to be talking about them like this? I'm sorry. This is plain. This is a series that IU has to win. And let's be honest, if IU wants to make a run, they need to sweep this series. Time is ticking. There's not a lot of opportunities. This is the last, hey, let's go get three wins that the team should get. The Gophers are 1-9 on the road so far this season. They were swept at home last weekend by Michigan, where they were outscored 34-10. I'd say the series was closer than that, mostly because of that first game, which I think they gave up 21 runs in the Friday game. On the pitching side, Sam Ireland, a sophomore right-hand pitcher, he's been getting the call for the openers. In 37 innings of work, he has given up 17 runs. He has struck out 35, walked 16. His ERA is 4.1. The game two starter is Jack Liffrig. Despite everything that I said, this guy is coming in as the reigning Big Ten pitcher of the week. So after throwing seven innings of shutout ball, he gave up two hits and a walk, struck out eight. So yeah, he struck out two more than Gabe did, you know, but he didn't get the win. Let's say that. so far this season, Liffrig has thrown 40 innings as a 4.24 ERA. He's given up 19 earned runs and seven strikeouts to go with 14 walks. He sits at 1-2 on the season. He is a lefty, so that may be the biggest concern for our hitters is that, given that he's coming from the left-handed side. After that, it's going to be a bit of a mystery who we're going to see on Sunday. Last week, Josh Culliver got the start. Culliver is a senior right-handed pitcher, has only thrown 14 innings to date. He's given up 10 runs, 14 strikeouts, 5 walks. He's 0-2 at a 6.43 ERA. As a staff, the Gophers are a 7.93 earned run average, 300 batting average against. Opponents have scored, it's only 24 games, 211 runs against this pitching staff. struck out 186 times to 140 walks, and have given up 39 home runs. So let's be honest, this is an opportunity for the Hoosier bats to get healthy, get on a roll, get comfortable. That's really what it's going to be about. Can Indiana hit? Can Indiana really make this team hit? And we know they're probably going to do what they've done before, which is throw breaking ball after breaking ball. But you know what? This team is ready to take this on. Offensively, Minnesota's led by Zach Rabe. Rabe is leading the Gophers in all statistical categories. He's hitting .405, four home runs, slugging .658. The one other guy to look for is Easton Bertrand. He's only hitting .255, but he has been coming off of late, had a big weekend, including five hits and two home runs against Michigan. Obviously one of the best teams in the league. But they only have two guys that are hitting over 300. They're only hitting .240 collectively. They've only hit 16 home runs. And walked 94 times. They've struck out 206 times. So he said, "This is a weekend that I'm not afraid to say this should be a sweep." There have been some scheduling movements of late. Friday is now a 1 p.m. doubleheader. That's the only time. We just don't know when the second game is going to start. That's going to depend on how long the first game goes and how much of a break they decide. Usually 45 minutes to an hour is the break. But, you know, game times can be different. The Sunday game at Northwestern was barely over 2 hours, so you never know. Both games will be 9 innings. That is really good news. The Hoosiers need to have an opportunity with the Minnesota bullpen, so glad to see those are going to be 9-inning games. Partly cloudy, 60 degrees on Saturday. Well, I'm sorry, on Friday. On Saturday, there's going to be no game. Sunday, it's going to be a morning game at 11 to wrap it up. Similar forecast, partly cloudy, 63. All games will be on BTN Plus, as usual, and the IU Radio Network. Josh put together all the details, really. The commentary on Minnesota, that was all mine. So now it is roundtable time. We kind of just came up with this last night. There was a topic that we had some heated debate on in our private chat. So we thought, hey, why don't we bring this out in the open? So to set the stage, I asked Coach Mercer a follow-up question in today's presser. You've been utilizing your middle bullpen typically in multiple innings as opposed to like using all of them for an inning. Is that something you project? Is that just kind of the normal plan and project going forward with kind of these matchups that you've been talking about?
Yes, because when we pick the guy, like I don't necessarily go into the game or Justin and I don't with a specific plan. It's like, hey, who's up and who's down? That's about it. Okay. And then reading swings and feeling the moment, it probably feels a little bit hectic for the players at times. I know for me, it can feel a little bit hectic and I don't like it, but it's proven to be the most effective because we do have a variety of options where going into the weekend, I would not have guessed that the sinker ballers would be that much more effective than the other guys. I mean, Nate Stahl was the first guy out of the pen. And so thinking about that was, if I could go back and do it again, Nate's not as good of a matchup as some of the other guys were. So the reason that those guys go in more in length is because I'll always look at Justin, look at me and be like, is there someone better than this guy in this moment? And it's like, well, if this guy is the right guy for this team, then he needs to throw until he is no longer effective. And it's not just necessarily the matchup, you know, the lefty or the righty. You know, Ty Bothwell can pitch to both guys. The fastball plays up, the breaking ball is good enough. He can get in, he can get up, all those kind of things. Braden Scott can pitch to both righties and lefties. And so for us, until they begin to lose their stuff, we want to stay with them because we've decided that's the best matchup. Now, we may have been an inning late on Saturday. We may have been a batter late on Saturday, or maybe it wasn't. Maybe that was the best matchup and they were just destined to eventually hit because good hitters eventually hit.
Chris, what are your thoughts on bullpen usage, especially the extending of middle relievers like they did with Tucker on Saturday?
I mean, listen, I understand where he's coming from. You know, I was really checking Twitter, not Twitter, but the YouTube feed a couple times today to see what he was going to say. Because I get it. All right. He's trying guys out. He's extending them. He wants to find the right pick, the right choice, the right matchup to replace the guy who was just pitching. But you put Tucker in and we weren't winning. You got two innings out of him. I wanted Litwicky for more time. I wanted a back end guy. You know, we heard via Instagram, Manis is out hurt. All right. So now he's not an option. But I don't know. It bothers me. At least, you know, listen, everybody has a different philosophy on it. But I'd like a set 7th, 8th, 9th inning game. You know what I'm saying? Or if you want to go with a bridge guy and then hit Litwicky twice for, you know, two innings in a big game if you can. It's not like he's pitched a lot. And there's no midweeks. And I feel like we don't play in all these close games where we got to save him because he's going to pitch two more times this weekend. Okay, maybe. But odds are that's not going to happen. And it just, the way I like to see it, and I know that's not perfect. We can even go back into texting last night. Obviously, it's not always going to work. But I would prefer to have, you know, let's say a stall in the 7th. I know Mattis is out now. However you want to play this out. And I don't even care who it is. You know, who is our best late inning guys? Give them a role. I think that's what I'm saying. That I think the kids would appreciate it. It's done in majors. It's done everywhere. You know, who are my role guys? Who are my back-end guys? Here it's like I feel like we're just like rolling dice to see what works. Obviously, that's not what he's doing. But sometimes it feels that way. Well, that it's predetermined. I liked how you asked him that in the presser. Like, no, it's not so predetermined. Like, it does tend a little bit of what's going on in the game or, you know, how the hitters are going against separate pitches, right? They're not hitting the sinker. They're not hitting the slider. They're not hitting the pitch with a lot of depth. And, you know, I know Parker and Mercer are real good at picking up on what hitters can't hit, and they really have an eye for it. So I get that. But I just feel like I want a role. I want the 7th, 8th, 9th, you know. Set it up simple for me. I'm not that complicated.
Cass, what do you think?
I'm kind of on the fence on this. I think to some extent, I mean, I think it's a little different depending on the day. You're not going to have Litwicky close out all three games.
Why can't you? If it's one inning.
If it's one inning, maybe.
You should close it.
Well,
close them.
I will say this. The one time I would agree with you was the last game at Ohio State. Because that was the last game of the weekend. He hadn't been used all weekend.
Yes.
That one, bro. I know that was the Easter Sunday game. We weren't really paying. We weren't all plugged in. We had other, you know, stuff we were doing. But all right, that I wanted 6 outs. But honestly, the man should be able to. The closers in this college baseball close every single Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yeah. What I'm saying is there's two innings. I was with you there on two innings in that particular case. Because he hadn't been used.
Yes.
And because he wasn't going to be needed again until the next weekend.
But why can't the guy close? You know, you said Cash just said, I don't think he, why not? Give me an inning Friday, an inning Saturday, an inning Sunday. Why can't that happen?
I think maybe later in the, like from maybe even from this point on in the season, early on, I don't want to overthrow a guy. Just because we've seen that happen time and again. Where down the stretch they're just not as sharp anymore because they've thrown
relievers
though
relievers. We've seen the starters do it, but I think the relievers are the guys who we can count on.
Well, you have though had some guys that were in fact in a situation where they really were just one inning guys.
Yes,
that's fine.
I mean, for example, you know, I would think Grant Sloan, who was phenomenal in this first
money
inning, and they tried to extend him to two inning outings, and it never worked.
No.
So I don't, I'm wondering, maybe Matt Litwicky's one of those guys. Now the question you're asking is, can he be used three games in a series?
Yeah.
Well, no.
I'd say
if they're going to do that, if they're going to use them all three, you can't go two innings.
I was just about to say that either you get something like even three games in a series, or you get multi innings.
But guess what? We're getting neither.
That is true. I definitely agree on that. I mentioned in the recap, it had been almost a month that since he had pitched. And and barring injury, that should not happen for a pitcher of Witwicky's caliber. Yeah,
but you're saying you don't think he could close all three games. I don't understand why.
I think he could. I think it's very situational. If he has the quick 1-2-3 inning like he did in game three, just no stress, easy pitches, great. But if one of those first two is a bit more labor, gets into some trouble, has more pitches, I'd be a little more hesitant to pull him out for the third game.
All right, but by then we've won the series, so then I'd be okay with it.
Yeah.
Well, here's an alternative, though, an alternative possibility, which is, and I know it's kind of hard, and this actually even more goes against what you're saying, Chris, though it would go to using Litwicky more, would be, let's say we get into one of those situations where McCabe Brown has loaded up the bases in like the fifth inning with one out and we need strikeouts. Yeah. I would be open to having Litwicky be thrown into that situation.
But then that's just thrown out your whole thing. You're not going to do that. That's the Efros role. That's the Wheeler role. What was that Wheeler?
Well, I just need to get out of that inning and then he's done.
But you got to think about that ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, who was the guy on the Tigers they were bringing in all the time? I can't think of his name. He was pitching three innings. Andrew Wheeler, was it? You know, you got to have a guy like that. You say, this is what he's going to do. He's going to throw – he might throw the sixth to the eighth. He might throw
– yeah.
I don't know. What happened to having a nice seventh, eighth, ninth? These are our guys.
Well, I'm going to answer that. And I think this is what it comes down to is – so, you know, to Coach's point, you know, he says, hey, we've identified a guy who we think his profile best matches against this thing, and he's not been used so far this weekend. And if it's working, the thought is, so let's say, back this up, let's say starter goes five. And then there's a sixth, seventh, eighth, and ninth that need to be covered. And obviously Litwicky's got the ninth. But you're going to take, I don't know, Stahl, Tucker, Madunio, Platt.
Unless he's hurt. He might be hurt. I don't know. We haven't seen him, though.
You mix up these guys. The point is you could easily get to four guys who could each cover an inning.
Of course.
So there's two schools of thought here. One school of thought is what you're thinking of is, hey, one inning each, they go through, they tear through it. But the other thought is, that's four guys, one of them might not have their stuff, and they're the one that's going to give up the big inning and cost the team the game.
Right.
Sixth is rolling, why not let him pitch the seventh and eighth and continue to roll? And then hand it over to Litwicky to close the door in the ninth.
For the same reasons Grant Sloan gives up the greedy second inning. For the same reason Tucker gets hit around in the eighth. I mean, I know there's six in one hand and half a dozen in the other. My point when last night is just, okay, you want to have your guy that's filling those innings after the starters. And I'm pro that this year, big time. We leaned a little too heavy on the starters last year, and we paid for it in Louisville Regional and the Big Ten. You know, we did. It was just so good. You know, you probably didn't want to take them out. Those guys are killing it. But I think you got to look down the line more. But I just, again, maybe I'm just greedy, man. I didn't like blowing a game in the eighth inning. I didn't like blowing that game on Easter Sunday. I don't like worrying about these close games against Purdue and the Penn State when we had to pull out of our pocket. And you know, he broke down. I think he said it's like a 1.8 ERA. That's what he said in the presser. I'm sure it's right. Sagerman's not going to give him bad information. But I was shocked that number was where it was. Maybe it's just because I'm looking at more late in the game, when obviously any reliever counts, right? Six, seven, eight, nine, you know, they all count. I just feel like if I had my way, that's what I would want. I feel like a role, you know, this is how we're going to play it out. And maybe this is all a tryout for that. But it didn't sound like it in the presser, I got to say. It sounded like he's okay with, you know, rolling like this.
Yeah, but then again, he was also very adamant that he was going to keep changing position players. And then we didn't even get a pinch hitter all weekend. So
it does make my stats easier.
Oh, I bet.
I mean, it was the same nine guys all weekend. That was
almost the same order. Same order, two out of the three games.
But that's what he's wanted. you know, as he's been here and he's talked and he's preached it, he wants to know who my guys are. Mm-hmm. I just don't know when that cut off the try. It's like he does tryouts. I really think that's kind of how it is.
Yeah.
And at some point, the tryout's over, and here is what I have.
And let's be honest with what the starting pitching has done. There's not been a lot of tryout.
No.
Starters have been outstanding.
Yeah.
But I think we thought they would be, no?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there were
question marks.
There were question marks. And, you know, I think Brown is one of the things. In the end, I guess Brown's about what we would expect, which is, you know, when he's on, oh my goodness, he's on. When there's control issues, it's a little more difficult. And the good news is, as they proved in the no-hitter, hey, if he throws the ball in the strike zone, most of the time it's going to take a good hitting team to do something with him. But I mean, that was against Illinois, and look what he did. Yeah. They're a good hitting team. Yeah. Northwestern was able to handle it a little bit better. Although, if you think about it, this is the thing that's most impressive, I think, about this past week with all the pitching. Northwestern hit 45 home runs before that series. They hit two home runs in that series, both with a guy who came in with only one.
Yeah.
When they had guys...
Only home runs they had, the guy who homered back-to-back innings?
Yes, that was it.
Arancado or something?
That was it.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't pick that up. I know I remember that action, but I thought they hit other bombs.
No, none of their scoring was off of bombs the other. That team was should have by the stats scored 6 to 7 home runs over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Held to two, and none of their top guys were the ones that hit them.
Yeah.
He just had a really good day, that kid.
And even a lot of their hits I mentioned for the third game, pair of infield singles. Game one, there were a couple of doubles, but up the middle, third base.
Well, the whole eighth inning.
Yeah.
With Tucker, and then who'd they bring in after Tucker? Who did we bring in? I don't remember, but.
Madunio.
It was Madunio. Single. I felt like it was all singles, you know? Yeah. Kind of like that skull inning that he got out of.
And none of them were hard hit. Through the right side.
Yeah, Mercer's always calling him like CNI something, whatever.
Well, yeah,
and then on Sunday, the only hits that Northwestern got at all were infield hits.
Just the two off Gabe, right? That could have been a legit, complete game if you want to keep going to him.
Yeah, that's where I get into a little bit of trouble if I were the coach, because I probably would have had Gabe finish out that eighth, and that probably wouldn't have ended well. I mean, Ty came in, got that immediate strikeout, and it was done. I always want to be greedy, but with the relievers, I don't know. I'd say I am fine with pretty much. I'm going to say pretty much, not quite anybody, but with pretty much anybody facing the order one time through. And if they can get three innings going one time through the order, phenomenal. If they get an inning and a partial, or they get two innings, I'm good with that.
And you can't pitch the rest of the series? You're okay with that? I don't know. I don't know if it's worth it, but
I think it depends on the series. I mean, if it's Tucker after McCade,
I'm not worried. We were losing anyway.
But I mean, that's been a bit of a trend. Tucker following McCade,
right? But Stoll following Summer has been also dreams. Right. I don't know if I love that one either. Maybe Stoll could be more of a back end guy.
Yeah,
Stoll's numbers are no joke.
But also, you look at Madunio, who had some really nice extended outings, and then
tried him in the back of the bullpen,
and tried him in the back of the bullpen. Well, but tried him at two innings here, and then in the same series two innings, and that second inning didn't go so well. Mm-hmm. So
We have just so many arms. Like, you don't have to keep doubling down. You don't have to triple it. Nobody has to go through the whole lineup. It's okay.
Oh yeah, but I'm just saying, if a guy is cruising, I'm not concerned about pulling them until you start to get to that getting through the order all the way. If you're going into a second round, that's where I start to get a little.
I agree. That's nervous. That's a little much. And unless it's a level of domination that's
right.
you know, like Gabe Bierman against Michigan type situation.
Right. Oh. Right. That's
that was nasty.
Those are the exceptions, not the rules.
Yeah.
I feel like even then, when that was happening, didn't we realize that he was a back? I mean, maybe not realize he was a starter or whatever, but during that game, we knew, okay, he's a back end guy now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like he had earned his chops, kind of.
Yeah.
I think that's what Mercer's doing.
Yeah.
But I don't know. That my only thing was, give it to me 7-8-9. Cool if it doesn't work. That's all it was. It was about having them have a role.
Yep. And I'm pretty solid on the 8-9. Have a setup, have a closer. Seventh, I can give or take. If you've got a guy who can bridge 6 and 7, I don't have.
Oh, no, that would be cool. Definitely.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with that. Guy go 6 and starter go 5, reliever 6 and 7, and then set up and close. I'm good with that.
Well, this one, this weekend, I don't think should matter too much. I better not matter.
I am knocking on wood while you say that.
I would not, though, be shocked if the thought process, though, is that we will see the starters get pulled a little earlier in their pitch counts.
Sure.
And maybe see, I would not be surprised to see a couple of, maybe not new faces, but faces that we either haven't seen in a while or.
Guys that we haven't seen a pitch.
I hope so, but that's because I'm hoping we're putting cricket number after cricket number on.
Yes.
That's why.
Right.
Other than that, it may not be the case. However, I also think that they may make the decision up front that they are going to limit the pitch counts. And just to Chris's point, this is an opportunity to make sure we're not overextending the starters without that break. Now, the good thing for Gabe is he got a week off because of the Illinois series.
Yeah.
So Gabe
and
maybe
Ty's rested.
Well, Ty, exactly. So, well, but yeah. So, but the point is we may see Ty he's the one that follows up Brown, and maybe Brown's limited to just, 60, 70 pitches or something. So,
yeah.
Remind me next weekend, is it a 4-pod or is it 4 versus Iowa?
It's a pod.
It's a pod. So it's four games.
No. Iowa's a 3-game series.
Okay. And isn't it Iowa at the Bart the following weekend?
Yes.
All right. So that's not a 4-gamer, and it's not a pod.
That
it's
is a
3-game
series, but oh my goodness, that is important. It may
but that's
be,
my no, but that's
be,
my.
It may be between IU and Iowa to get that fourth spot in the NCAA
And that's
tournament,
my so. Point, and I'm grateful and I'm happy that it's a legit, real baseball series. 9-9-9.
Yep.
Good. I don't want a pod with Iowa involved.
Yeah, I think Iowa's actually they played like a whole bunch of pods at the beginning. They're done with their pods, so.
Because I know we do have some more pods.
And that's
coming
why
up.
Their RPI is so good.
Yeah, it's pod after that.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know we have
after
a few that. Coming after that, and then
no.
We got the 7-inning doubleheader. This doesn't feel is real, but I mean, Major League's doing it. So what are you going to do?
Now, this is the interesting thing about the pod that we're playing, because of the way the schedule is, we're going to face the number one and number two for both teams.
Mm. Yep.
So that is really good news. Why Gabe is doing so well, because Gabe is going to be in basically a Friday night matchup when he goes to.
And this is following Iowa. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yep. It's also one where all of the times are going to be shifted up quite a bit from what you would normally see this time of year, because the field at Piscataway does not have lights.
Yep.
Oh, listen, the New Jersey, come on.
Well, we get to face Ratowski again. Hopefully we'll hit him this time.
He was good. He was real good, man. Right out the gate, game one of the year, right?
Yeah, he's struggled the last couple of weeks. So I don't know, we'll see. But I actually kind of like the fact that Jack Lifford got for Minnesota got pitcher of the week. I would love for IU to put like a 10 spot up on him. So
I would rather have a guy coming off of something like that than a guy who's coming off of the 10 spot.
Well, I mean, Lonsway has only had one good outing.
Yeah. Yeah,
all year.
Yeah,
but you know he's a guy. Game. Both of those guys, the Rutgers guy is not Lonsway, but we knew the Rutgers guy was pretty good.
Yeah, we did.
But I mean, Lonsway he's not really produced another good outing since then, and he was just he had an immaculate
Unhittable.
Inning. Yeah, it's just
Hey, sometimes you get one of those days.
Yep, we just hope that no one else has it against us. Okay, well. After that lively discussion, I think that'll do it for this edition of Talking Hoosier Baseball. You can read up on Indiana baseball at iubase.com and follow us on Twitter at CUAtTheBart and at iubase17. On Instagram, it's iubase. And you can always subscribe to the Talking Hoosier Baseball channel on YouTube, which features these video podcasts, game clips, game day media availabilities, and much more. For Carl James and Chris Feeney, I'm Cassidy Palmer, and one day we will all be together again at the BART.